You have probably heard of the three marks of existence, or the three characteristics of existence of the Buddha's teaching: anicca, dukkha, anatta, meaning ongoing changing, no fixed permanent self, and unsatisfactoriness or suffering. Of course, that's an English translation, and there could be other ways to state those three characteristics of life, of reality. Often, we say ongoing changing, or cause and effect, another way of saying it, and no fixed permanent separate self. And then the harming is because we misconstrue that, or the unsatisfactoriness is because of that. But in a way, that's not quite right, because that makes the third characteristic as a consequence of. But in a way, the third characteristic is built into beingness, of existence. The nature of beings, not just humans, though humans are what we're most intimately familiar with, particularly our own humanness, but unsatisfactoriness has to do with beings wanting certain things and not getting it, or dukkha, suffering, if we describe it that way, wanting things, trying to get things, and sometimes getting it and sometimes not, and then, of course, manifesting the poisons of greed, anger, or confusions about what's happening. But this is so with all sorts of animals, whether it's the shark attacking a fish and a fish trying to escape, or two rams butting heads over who's going to be the dominant one, or lions attacking, chasing, or, and you could add on all sorts of ors. In a sense, the issue for us is not that we want things or don't want things or want things not to, but it's that we get caught in what we want. The arising of wanting something is just an arising of being embodied. The consequences of getting entangled in it, based on what the facts of reality that's always changing, the facts of self and not self that we hold on to as if my wanting it should result in, is what manifests in this entangling in satisfactoriness or unsatisfactoriness, in upset reactions, if I simplify it, in sadness about what should have, could have, and all sorts of other ways that we manifest it in, if I say it, unskillfully, with consequences that just creates trouble for us and for others. We want the universe to cater to us. It's fine. And yet, we get to suffer when it doesn't cater to us. The universe could mean so-called inside me or outside me. It could be other people, or it could be the snow outside if you're living in the Midwest right now and it's not what you planned. All sorts of ways that, as we point out and remind ourselves in the practice principles, we get caught in self-centered dream. It's not that the self-centered dream arises that's the problem. The self-centered dreams, the thoughts and feelings, emotions, arise in us being embodied, in the nature of reality, just as ongoing changing, no fixed self, or other ways you want to translate anicca, anatta, dukkha, those are just the nature of this reality. It's when seeing, we just see, except we see and then add on. I'm seeing her. He's seeing me. He's seeing me in a way that I don't want to. I should hide from him. He shouldn't be doing that. Or they shouldn't. Or that shouldn't be what I open up my window. Or this shouldn't be the way I feel. Or that's why our practice isn't to get rid of what arises, whether it's greed, anger. It's the caughtness in that when that arises. It's first, it's the willingness to notice that. The importance to skillfully, and it depends, of course, on your particular practice, how you skillfully see that and make the effort, if there is an effort, or simply allow it to pass, make the effort to be right where you are, to be this ongoing, changing non-self. Be this unsatisfactoriness that's only unsatisfactory as a problem if you believe that things inside, outside are supposed to satisfy you. If you hold on to, that's harming me when he says that, when she eats that, when I don't get to have that. That's why we remind ourselves caught in self-centered dream, holding to the self-centered thoughts. That's where the rub comes. That's where the trouble comes. When we get angry, when we indulge in that poison. The poison arising, the poison being on the shelf isn't the problem. It's when we take it from the shelf and indulge in it. But it's important to notice when it's on the shelf, because if we fight it and deny it, then we indulge in it without even being willing to notice that. That's the importance, the value, the strength of ongoing practice, both in terms of formal sitting, formal practice, formal walking. And I don't mean just formal, I mean in the sense of doing it in the midst of your daily activities. And including all sorts of activities as your practice opportunity of being just this moment, of being the life of the universe, which is revealing itself as ongoing changing, revealing itself as no fixed self, no fixed self and other, revealing itself in feeling and experiencing that it's snowing and you don't want it to snow. The snow isn't satisfying me. It's supposed to stop. Or there should be more because I want to go skiing. And how come there's no or? And sometimes, of course, in some Buddhist traditions, they add a fourth mark of existence called shunyata or emptiness or formlessness. And I know Mushin has talked a little about this during the week, so I won't say anything more about it today. But of course, every time we recite, chant, remind ourselves of the Heart Sutra, it clarifies form is emptying. Emptiness is form. Form is exactly emptiness. Emptiness exactly form. And form, of course, is sensation, conception, discriminations, all the way of speaking about, looking at this very existence that is who and what we are. Who and what we are. That's what our practice is always encouraging us to be. Who and what this universe, which means this universe that isn't anything, and yet it seems like it's a thing right now, and just be this. And notice what you add on. What's skillful to support you in doing this? What's skillful to support us in doing this? So, I want to add two other things. One is Mushin is going to post, when he posts this talk, he's also going to post the short article from Joko that I think is helpful to us. This is a short article that she wrote, I think, if I remember, 1990 or whatever. And that will be very helpful. But also I'm going to bring up a case just to help. This is Wu Ye and False Thought, National Teacher Wu Ye. So a practitioner asked National Teacher Wu Ye, what is Buddha? And there's a commentary by Shui Do, how fresh and new. Now, is that ironical or what? Well, it is fresh and new. And yet, National Teacher said, don't think falsely, or not thinking falsely, depending upon how you translate the Chinese. And Shui Do's comment, heavens, heavens. And then, no, actually, that is, those comments aren't Shui Do. Those comments, excuse me, are Yuan Wu's. Shui Do added a comment to this and said, he's blocked the nostrils. He, meaning Wu Ye, blocked the nostrils. And Yuan Wu's comment is, how long has he been dead? Then another practitioner asked the national teacher, what is Buddha? Second case. National teacher said, mind itself is Buddha. And Yuan Wu's comment is, a mouthful of frost. Shui Do's cited this and he said, he stays the tongue. He, meaning national teacher, stays the tongue. And Yuan Wu's comment on that, mute, or mute, question mark. I'll repeat the case just once. This is from a collection called The Tap. This is, I mentioned this collection several weeks ago. This is from late 10th century, early 11th century, but it's the cases are much earlier. National Teacher is about 8th century. A practitioner asked National Teacher Wu Ye, what is Buddha? National Teacher said, don't think falsely. Another practitioner asked, what is Buddha? National Teacher said, mind itself is Buddha. Thank you.